I said, not really. So great thought. I look forward to that aspect as well.
Yeah, next step is to write a QST article and get that published hopefully sometime. And then open source the code. So it's kind of a mess right now, but I really want to open source it. It actually is. Some of it is on the web already on GitHub. But I need to get the rest up there and get the model out there and get, you know, people's hands on it. So I think the first transmission is going to be over actually remote ham radio. I'm going to use some like tower in Maine to talk to someone here in Long Island or something, right? that'll be the first Cascade transmission, so look forward to that. All right, cool. I'll pass it back to you. Thank you, everybody. K0BB.
Okay. Sounds fantastic. Thanks for sharing, and I do look forward to the future chapters in this story.
A2VAC.
Yeah?
Very interesting, that. Good stuff. I'm not 100% on board, but I'm 98% on board. Good stuff. Thanks for what you guys do.
Okay. I'm glad to have the opportunity to share Ryan's work with all you guys. And again, I hope it's just the beginning of a great story. So I look forward to the future installments. Anyway, this is still AC2GS, and this is still the Limemark Technical Net. We have a little bit more time left if anyone is so inclined. So if anyone has any questions or comments or topics or things that they would like to address appropriate to a technical net before the SpaceNet report starts, then hit that push to talk and tell me. Okay, don't want to plead with you guys. I just thought I would throw out the option, give you the opportunity, but I guess not. We'll try one more time. If anyone has any questions, comments, topics, what have you, we have about 5, 6, 7 minutes if you're so inclined. If not, we'll just move on to the next segment, but we'll give you another chance. If you're out there, hit that push to talk.
KD2VHD.
Yes, Jim?
Roy, I think the listeners or the participants have had a great stirring of their mind tonight, wherever they stand on things. Give a little time frame. There was a lot of cerebral stuff going on tonight. Good stuff.
Okay, yeah, I mean, sometimes it turns out that way, sometimes not, but I had good vibes about this particular TechNet, except when my computer crashed 5-10 minutes before it began. But despite that, it calmed down and behaved rather nicely, so I'm very happy. That unfortunately, the hiccups and falling out was my desktop was basically launching all the background applications and losing focus repeatedly. But you know, once it all did that and just stopped, then everything settled down. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned some things. I hope you'll come back next Sunday at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. It's a little bit early, but not terribly early, but it's a good time to shift over to Paul WS2N for the SpaceNet report.
WS2N, SpaceNet report for the TechNet. And, yeah. Listen to the whole thing. Very good topics, like Jim said. Yeah, you're not going to get that information anywhere else. You got a couple of topics tonight, but one topic is what I think is very important. I'm crackling on my radio, and I'm transmitting. Sure, hear that. Anyway, there's been a news report by NASA that the crew. Crew 11 is going to be coming back early. Crew 11, Crew 4 that went up August 1st to the International Space Station. And it turns out they're supposed to stay, you know, for another couple of months. But they are now going to come home early. In fact, they'll come home early Thursday because of a medical emergency. And the emergency is one of the astronauts that was on that crew that went up on number 11. You have a total of 7 people on board the space station right now. When they come back, you're going to have just 3 people on board. What you'll have left is 1 American and 2 Russians. And it will be up to the single American to run all the equipment on the American side of the International Space Station. So you're going to have by the way, his name is Chris Williams. In fact, he just went up recently. He went up with 2 Russians on a Soyuz spacecraft. So Williams launched in November, and they have plans of staying like for 8 months up there. So the good news is he does have some kind of medical experience. So he'll be able to help out, you know, the 2 Russians if they get sick. They always like to try to keep an actual doctor or, you know, somebody that's, you know, gone through medical training at least. You know, they might be, you know, expert physicists or something like that, but, you know, somewhere in their past they've had medical training. So that helps. But if they have a serious problem, they'll bring everybody back that was on board that spacecraft. And in this case, you have the 4 people. Kim Yui, he's from Japan. So he's part of the European Space Agency group. And then you have one Russian that went up with that group of 4, Oleg Planatov, I think it is. And you have Michael Fink and Zena Carman. Zena Carman was the commander on the SpaceX Dragon that went up to the International Space Station with these 4 people. And Michael Fink was officially the pilot, although Michael Fink has a lot of experience. This was his 4th flight up to space. Only the first for Zena Carman. And Yuri has been up there, you know, the Japanese guy. He's been up there before. So they're trying to figure out, well, when I say they, the news media is trying to figure out which one of these 4 are sick. And I've pretty much been able to eliminate a fellow from Japan since he was in communications with, you know, by radio to people in Japan, and he was telling people, oh, no, I'm fine. I'm okay. So I'm going to eliminate him. So now we're down to either the Russian or Zena Carman or Michael Fink. You know, their goal is to separate from the International Space Station about 12 hours before they land. They're going to land like 3-4 o'clock in the morning in the Pacific Ocean on Thursday. So they'll disconnect on Wednesday. If it was a true emergency, they have the capability of jumping into that spacecraft and leaving and probably getting back to Earth within 6 hours. But they'd rather not do that if they can avoid it. So apparently this medical emergency, you know, it's not life-threatening, although they, you know, once it gets to a point where they can't handle it on board, they know they have to get the person back to Earth. And there's been medical problems in space before. they've never had to actually cancel a flight. I think it's like a month and a half. Going to be short of a complete mission. So, but up to do that, it's got to be pretty important. And it's a heck of a way for the new administrator to start off. You got Jarek Isaacman, who took over recently, involved with the political end of things and everything. He was going to be put in as NASA administrator, and then they pulled him, and then they eventually put him back again. And anyway, he's now approved. But one of the first things he's getting involved in is this medical, let's call it a medical emergency. So I'm just wondering, what it could possibly be. I've been reading up on different problems, and I don't know. I've narrowed it down to two things that happen in space that might be a problem. And that would be, one could be a kidney stone. I would think that would be a serious problem. But if you're up there for, let's say, they went up in August, so it's, 4 or 5 months. Could a kidney stone develop in 4 or 5 months? That could be one problem. Or it could be, I think that might be a problem as well. Michael Fink and Zena Cardman were supposed to do an EVA. They were going to go out. I thought I'd be talking about that tonight. They were supposed to go out on the 8th, a couple of days ago, and install equipment that will eventually put an extra solar panel to add to the power output of the station. And that was, they were apparently in procedure of doing that. And then at that point they canceled. So I'm guessing that might have something to do with that. Before they do an EVA, they inhale pure oxygen for quite a few hours. And they need to avoid the bends. Similar to what happens if you go scuba diving and, you come up too quick. You wind up getting the nitrogen released in your blood and stream and all. I'm wondering, could that cause a blood clot? And if it did cause a blood clot, with the equipment on board the space station, would they be able to determine, that it is a blood clot, or and where is it? It happened many years ago where somebody did wind up with a blood clot, and mission control, you have doctors on board, sent up a procedure or something or whatever they did, and it was able to alleviate that. So that tells me they possibly have a way to detect these things on board the space station. I don't know. Anyway, I'm playing a detective here trying to figure out who it is and what the problem is. Maybe Roy, you would know. What do you think the chances of? I'm thinking kidney stone, but because they just say staying in space for a long period of time and not being that active could possibly lead to that. And from what I understand, that could be very painful. You are still listening, Roy? AC2GS, WS2X.
Yeah, I'm listening. It's difficult to tell. I don't know exactly what kind of diagnostic equipment they have available in there. So without knowing whether they have ultrasounds or it's highly unlikely they were able to detect the clot. I can't see them, putting that type of equipment just in case on the ship.
Yeah. Bert's name is he went up many years ago, and he said that they do have x-ray equipment up there, but it's only good for x-raying mice, but if they did have an x-ray machine, would an x-ray machine be able to detect a clot or a kidney stone?
A kidney stone, possibly. A clot, no. It's soft tissue. It wouldn't show up on the x-ray with any kind of definitive image.
Okay, good point. Okay. Well, we'll be standing by to find out what happens. They say they won't release the information, and which is possible. I mean, a while back they did have an astronaut that was sick, and they came back on a Dragon, and they took all the astronauts that were on board, four of them, and they get off on a recovery ship, and then a helicopter takes them to land, and to this day they never said which astronaut had a problem, and they all managed to keep this quiet. But I don't think they're going to be able to keep this one quiet. Taxpayers want to know, how dangerous is it going to be to send people to the moon for maybe months at a time, or to even Mars. When you talk about Mars, you're talking about three year journeys. 6 months out, 6 months back, and a year on the planet is minimum time. So they like to figure for around 3 years. But if you're on the way to Mars and something goes wrong and you don't have, well, maybe a fancy X-ray machine or an MRI machine to really look into what's wrong with one of your astronauts, you're going to be in big trouble, because you can't turn the rocket around and, blast the engines and come back. It doesn't work that way. You'd have to wait until you got all the way to Mars, and then did one orbit around Mars, and then you're able to fire your engine to get back. They call that a free return. But even doing that, it's a one-year problem. 6 months out, 6 months back. So we'll see. I'm dropping. I think for that reason alone, people are going to want to know at least what was the problem. Which person it is. Well, yeah, that's private, but They should be able to know, what the problem was and how to prepare for something like that if it happens again. And, was it related to gravity for, 4 or 5 months? Can you develop a kidney stone in that period of time, which I don't know. I never had it. I know people that have had it, and either you go for operations, or I think that there's some kind of a ultrasound thing that they, not ultrasound, some kind of sonic vibrations or something that they use to break it up. Anyway, anybody with any comments, this is WS2N for the SpaceNet Report. Okay, nothing heard. But yeah, could you imagine heading off to the moon and ending up with a problem, either en route or actually on the moon? I think that's one of the many problems that's going to be involved with long duration trips away from low Earth orbit. 250 miles up where the space station is, that's one thing. 250,000 miles to the moon, that's another. Even 1,000 times further than that to Mars. Not good. But we'll see. You have astronauts that will line up to do this, but the last thing they need is some kind of a problem like that. And it's a shame, Zena Cardman, she was supposed to go up a couple of years ago, with a crew of four on a SpaceX rocket. And what happened was, before her and her group, you had Sonny Williams and Butch Wilmore got themselves, as the news said, you know, stranded on the International Space Station. They went up in the Starliner spacecraft built by Boeing, and they had problems with their reaction control jets, and NASA chose to leave them on board, just bring the spacecraft back, which they did, safely landed in New Mexico. But the crew stayed on board, and it was only two people that went up because it was the first crewed flight of China. And it was, if that was successful, all flights after that would have been four at a time. Wound up staying on board instead of, you know, 8 days. They stayed up for like 8 months. But to get them back, they needed another spacecraft to come up and get them. So what they did is, instead of sending up the four that was supposed to go up eventually, they just sent up two. This way, they have now a total of four that's able to go back. They could bring Sonny Williams and Butch Wilmore back. But to do that, when they sent the two up, canceled two other people, one other woman, and one of the other women was Zena Cardman, the one that's coming back now. So she got scratched on that flight and had to wait. But sure enough, time went by, and they gave her another seat, and now she's up there. This would have been her first EVA, first spacewalk, and she was going to do that with Mike who's also coming back on Thursday. So the two were scheduled to go out. And so she winds up with a shortened stay on the International Space Station. Believe me, these people, they want to stay there forever. They love doing that kind of work. But that's a disappointment. And now, even a bigger disappointment, that would have been the first spacewalk she could have done. So that's canceled. So we'll see. We'll see what happens in the future. Never goes up again, I'm going to suspect, well, maybe she was the one with the medical problem. But we'll never really know for sure unless they actually decide to release that information. Any comments? Okay, so I mentioned the crew that's going to be going around the moon. And that's Stan Bob. Anyway, the SLS is poised, like ready to go. It's inside the vehicle assembly building right now. It's completely stacked. It's got everything attached to it. It's got the main core with the four RS-25 engines, liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen. It's got the two solid boosters attached to it, very similar to the solid boosters that they used for 135 flights of the shuttle system years ago. Basically, the same solid boosters except longer. They were segmented boosters. In other words, there was four pieces. Four barrel pieces that were put together, creating the solid booster. With this version of the SLS, they made it five, so 20% longer. And naturally, there's two of them, one on the port side, one on the starboard side. And then they have the second stage, which is the cryogenic propulsion stage. The interim cryogenic propulsion stage. And that is liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen also. And it's got one RL-10 engine that's going to be used to push them on their way. You know, once they're in orbit around Earth and everything checks out, they're going to need to be pushed to the moon. So that one engine will fire on that second stage, and it'll push them on their way. And they call that a TLI, translunar injection. Once they do that, they're on their way, and they're not going to come back. They're going to orbit, really, the moon once. They're not really going to go around and around the moon. They're going to go way past the moon, like 30,000 miles or something past the moon. And then gravitation will keep them from really going much further. And then they'll be heading back, you know, after that. They'll reignite that engine, make sure it fires again, and then they'll eventually, a couple of days later, land in the Pacific Ocean. So it's roughly a 10-day mission for the crew, and we're looking forward to that mission. We'll definitely talk a lot about that. Crew of four compared to the Apollo days of a crew of three. So if that works out, you know, give it another year or so, providing they can eventually develop a proper spacecraft to get them from lunar orbit to the surface of the moon and then back. If they can't do that, then we're going to, you know, all bets are off. They'll just wait until that's done. You have two companies trying to do it, SpaceX and Blue Origin. SpaceX has their Starship that they plan on using to do that. And then Blue Origin, I think, has a better system. They have something called the Blue Moon, the Mark II version. And whenever that's developed, the plan is to send that vehicle into orbit around the moon, a highly elliptical orbit, by the way. And that will eventually dock with a future Orion spacecraft, similar to the one that will be going up in February. And that will dock with the lander will dock with the Orion spacecraft. Two of the people from the Orion will go into the lander, go down to the moon, eventually come back up again, redock with the Orion spacecraft, and then all four come back again. And I'm not holding my breath for when that takes place. But this flight, they do have plans on launching on February 6th. We'll see. Of course, many, many times there's delays. Sometimes either weather delays or equipment delays or, you know, some kind of leaks to get Artemis 1 off the launch pad. Last time was a big endeavor. They had leaks around the quick connect that attaches to the rocket. And they tried this and they tried that, and eventually it brought the whole thing back to the vehicle building. Like a month or so later, eventually they sent it back out again, and eventually that spacecraft was launched without a crew. And did something very similar that they plan on doing with the crew. It went out past the moon and eventually came back and landed in the Pacific Ocean. So we'll see. Any comments? Doug, to end.
Okay, nothing heard. And I know at least one person is a ham on board that crew, so I'm wondering if they're going to eventually have some time, 4 days, I think it's 3.5 days to get to the moon. And well, anyway, overall, it's a 10-day trip. Maybe they'll have time somebody will be able to get a QSO from any place beyond low Earth orbit. You know, we have thousands of people that have made contacts with the space station world, you know, 250 miles up. Before that, we had the SARex missions, shuttle amateur radio experiment missions, and, you know, before the space station existed, and there was some contact with that. You know, that predated the amateur radio on the International Space Station ARIS program that we have now. But what we need now is a program for having our astronauts eventually either in a permanent orbit around the moon in a space station and the Gateway space station, or even better, you know, set up a ham base on the moon. What could be better? That would be a real good DX contact. I hope it's CW. Anyway, any comments? WS2N. Okay, nothing heard. Canada is now in the process of building their own launch complex. You know, we have plenty of them in the United States right now, although not enough. We have about 3 or 4 launch complexes out in Vandenberg, and they're working on another one. And in Florida, we have, there's some of them, there's 14, number 16, 39A, 39B, 36 for Blue Origin. So, you know, you got like 7 or 8 launch complexes that are either active or near active, in the United States. Plus, you have another one up in Kodiak, Alaska. And you have 3 launch complexes in Virginia over at Wallops Island. In the United States. Then you have a suborbital flight that takes off in Mexico for Blue Origin. They always send up a crew of 6. And then from the same state, once Virgin Galactic gets back into business, they'll be doing the same thing, suborbital flights there. But Canada does not have anything, but they now, got the approval, and from what I understand, they're starting to build their own launch complex in Newfoundland. Actually, it's on the coast, and Newfoundland's a weird place to get to. You can't drive there. There's no bridge, and there's no tunnel, so they take ferries to get to Newfoundland. I think that's kind of weird, but I guess the boosters and equipment will be sent probably by barge, unloaded near the launch site. So within a couple of years, they think within 2 years they'll have a launch complex that's ready, and they're also there's one company out of Canada. Canada is involved with developing a reusable rocket, with the first stage, second stage. Canada looks like they don't want to be caught short-handed. They depend on European Space Agency for launching some experiments and satellites that they like to send up. For decades, they've been dealing with the United States.
You know, we've been launching things for them on multiple different kinds of rockets from different companies, you know. So I think they see the way things are going. It looks like countries like ours, they're trying to, you know, they put pressure on different countries. Everybody wants their own launch complex now. Even Sierra Leone, I think, or someplace out there in India, wants to build their own launch complex. But within a couple of years, be launching rockets, and they have the capability of mostly polar orbits, but they can go on somewhat of an equatorial flight if they had to. That's determined by where your launch complex is located. For instance, the one over in Kodiak that we have up there, you know, few launches that they've launched are all polar missions. Same holds true mostly for Vandenberg as well in California. Up in on the eastern coast with Virginia and the Cape, they've been able to do both polar or equatorial. But you know, think about how many launch complexes there are on the Earth. I mentioned the ones in the States. You know, India has like at least three. European Space Agency has three launch complexes in New Guinea, French New Guinea in South America. They launch solid booster rockets. They call the Vega, and they have the new one, the Ariane 6 rocket, which has flown quite a few times already. Japan has launch complexes with their H-3 rocket. Just recently, they launched their first large cargo vehicle to the International Space Station. That's attached to it now. It's a real large spacecraft. They used to have a smaller one, but last couple of years, 3 or 4 years, they developed this bigger one. Pretty cool. And of course, Russia has launch complexes in the north, and they have Baikonur launch complex. That's the only that they launch crews from right now, because of the last launch that just went up, which has had one American on board. The infrastructure below the spacecraft, where, you know, it's a work, gigantic work platform, you know, like an acre of steel that collapsed and went down into the hull. They're rebuilding that. They won't be able to launch crews until that's complete. And Russia also has Baikonur now, which is very close to Alaska. You know, that they launched their Soyuz right now. Anyway, unmanned crew from there. Of course, Korea has a launch complex. And now another one in Brazil, which they tried to launch a couple of weeks ago, but that thing blew up. Luckily, it didn't destroy the launch complex. Well, you know, it was far enough away when it blew. That was their first orbital attempt. That didn't work out. But, you know, there you go. From what I understand, Australia had that one. You can't forget Electron rockets out in New Zealand. They have two launch complexes there. Any comments? I've pretty much run out of material, so this is WS2N. And we have a ULA bulk will be going up, and that will be in February. But that's a very successful rocket, by the way. It launched three times. All three times were successful. And this will be the fourth time. Once they get up to a good cadence, they'll be doing, you know, maybe a dozen flights a year with the Vulcan rock. But if nobody has any comments, I'll turn it back over to Roy for an early night. This WS2N for the Space Net Report. Any comments? Okay. Well, see next time. And by next week, maybe we'll find what happened to one of the four astronauts that are coming back. And now our next, let's see, tomorrow's Monday, so we have the ClubNet, and that's on at 8:30 on these repeaters. Club Info on that, followed by Radio Newsline later in the evening, and in between you have Swap and Shop with George, and nobody mentioned Ham Radio University. I haven't found out how that went, but for sure we'll find out how it went on the club InfoNet tomorrow night. But they've been doing that since 1999. I went to the first one, 1999. But here we are, guess what, 26 years later, 27 years later. And that's always a very good thing to go to. Roy, AC2GS, WS2N, for the Space Net Report for the TagNet. Back to you.
Yeah, this is AC2GS. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all you do for the technical net and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it. And I especially appreciate everyone's participation tonight. I hope you had fun. I hope you learned a few things. And I hope you'll come back next Sunday at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. As per usual, I'll leave you with a few clever comments from people who've come and gone. Our own Dick K2RIW always would finish his technical nets with the good advice to be kind to each other. That's always good advice. And I always like to add Epictetus's, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So try and keep your mind open to new ideas, but don't open your mind so much that your brain falls out, because you're going to need it one of these days. Anyway, have a great week. Stay safe. Be well. And if you can, come back next Sunday when we try this all over again. This is AC2GS formally closing this episode of the Limark Technical Net. And I'll be clear after I say, Slava Ukraini.
W2VL repeater.
7,000 kilohertz later on.
W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.